Each month, though, we have the book club with writer and journalist Sylvia Kent and a guest. So today I'm going to be chatting to Sylvia about Billericay Writers, Brentwood Writers, Billericay Readers. We're also going to be talking about the Society of Women Writers and Journalists. 12:05, we're going to be talking to our guest, who is a writer and book designer as well, called Paul Burridge. So good morning, guys. How are you today?
Good morning. Very well.
And Paul's there as well. How are you doing, Paul?
I'm doing fine, thank you very much.
Lovely. We're going to be chatting to Paul in a while. So let's start off with yourself, Sylvia. What have you been up to? Because you're always a busy lady. Oh.
Well, you've mentioned the Christmas word, and we've been working towards that in the various groups we belong to, including Brentwood Writers Circle, which recently Paul has, he's been a visitor, has been very, very useful to some of our people who haven't been published yet, and he's helping them in many ways. He'll tell you about that a bit later on. But readers groups, we're reading quite a lot of different kind of books at the moment. We're reading the David Ullman book, which is brilliant, called Skellig, and several of us are reading that. Others are reading The Binding by Bridget Collins. And some of us are reading and reviewing, which is quite good. I must get a few more onto the programme for you.
Excellent. So tell us a little bit about the two books you're reading. You said about the David Ullman book. What's that about?
That's Skellig. And it's really, I think, for young adults. But I've yet to get that copy. The library get them. They bring them in for us to read, which is lovely, because sometimes trying to buy them is not easy when you've got a big group of 12, 15 people who are in the Billericay Readers Group. But the writers are really looking forward to meeting at Christmas. On the 3rd, we're going to have a Christmas party. You must come to one of these, because you'll have a lot of fun. And you too, Paul, come to one of our Christmas parties. They're super. London Writers at the National Liberal Club. We've got a few places left for lunch. And if anyone's interested and want to know more about us, we've got the website, which I think you publish. www.swwj.co.uk. So lots of Christmassy things coming up,
and
have
you made any more of your Christmas? Because I know you make a lot of wines and chutneys and all sorts of things. Have you been busy on the chutney front this year?
Well, not really, because we haven't been able to get to the farms to get the ingredients. But I've got a new article coming up. It should be a regular for one of the farming magazines. So all of that work that I used to do on the chutney and the piccalilli,
yes,
is going to be used in that article. So hopefully monthly.
Yes.
And also I'm writing short stories.
Brilliant.
Quite a lot going on.
And you've been published all over the place. You've already got, 13 books, and you're continually writing, and you write short stories, and you win awards as well.
Yeah, well, if I'm lucky and good enough, sometimes they're not. But it's lovely when you do win a cup or the check. Paul probably knows all about this. But, yeah, it's lovely. And we've got a great bunch of writers at Brentwood, and we do welcome everyone to come along and see how we can help them perhaps produce their own book or memoirs, you know, that kind of thing.
And what book are you writing? Are you setting off? I know you said you weren't going to, but are you writing a new book at the moment, or is something going to be for 2023?
It won't be 2020, probably 2025, because it's about a lot of the people I've met over 30 years of writing and interviewing people, including, as you know, Enid Blyton. Yes. Met her when I was 8. And so she kicks off the list of people that I've met. And now Paul will probably be in it in time. So he's looking a bit worried. I can see him on the screen. Yeah. But, you know, we've had a lovely year despite all the problems. And I've got a 60-second piece for you whenever you want it.
Excellent. So every month Sylvia does 60 seconds of history, which is around Brentwood, Billericay, all the surrounding areas, and she puts this together and manages to get to the 60 seconds. And then when we finish with Sylvia, didn't Sam? That wasn't a very good term, was it? When I finish speaking to Sylvia, then we're going to go to the news, and then we're going to come back with our guest writer for this month, who is called Paul Burridge, and we're going to be chatting to him about 12:05, so we'll be having a chat with him then. So 60 seconds of history, what's it about?
Well, we've had some very famous people, as you know, living in Brentwood and environs, and some of the streets again are quite famous. One of them is Crown Street. So can I talk about that?
Oh, that is amazing. Yes, I love Crown Street. I'm going there tomorrow, in fact.
Okay, off we go. Now, Crown Street is special to many Brentwood residents, past and present. Some famous folk are linked to the street. One is the child prodigy, musician and hymnologist Arthur Henry Brown, who played the organ at St. Thomas's Church aged 10. He went to Brentwood School, by the way. He wrote the words and music to many hymns we sing at Christmas around the world. Local famous philanthropists John and George Larkin owned several shops in Crown Street, trading for more than a century. Their shop is now our super bookstore, The Chicken and Frog. Another famous name is Richard Madeley, who arrived to work at the Brentwood Argus newspaper offices in Crown Street on his Vespa scooter. Brian Davis, my friend, his editor, remembers hiring a 16-year-old cub reporter during the 70s. Madeley and his family came to live in Hartswood Road, close to Shemble Common. He attended Shemble School before deciding on a life in television and the media.
Excellent. And just under 60 seconds. And his sister taught me English. His sister was an English teacher, Richard Madeley's sister.
Oh, wonderful.
There we go. Yeah. Well, wonderful.
And I lived in Hartswood Road as well, number 2.
Oh,
for 30 years.
Yes.
Before coming to Billericay.
Yes. It's been great to talk to you, Sylvia. So you can stay there as well, because we're going to be chatting to Paul in the next couple of minutes. I should be joined on the line by Paul Burridge, who is this month's guest on the book club. So very good morning to you, Paul. Good afternoon, rather.
Good morning. Oh, good afternoon, Michelle.
So we change from the morning to the afternoon. I get confused every time.
It's only 2 minutes.
Yeah. So we're going to be talking about you yourself. So when did you first get the writing bug? And then when did you first seriously put pen to paper?
When I was at art school, I had a book conventionally published. That was in 1975. I hesitate to say, but I was at art school 5 years before then. But it appeared on the bookshelves in 1975. It sold out. Unfortunately, the publisher died, and the company didn't continue. But I'm now in the rare and vintage section of ABE Books. And a book that was selling for about £1.50 back in the day is now selling for £176.
Wow. And what was that first book you did in 1975? What was it about?
Oh, it was a children's book called Umbola and the Computer.
Oh, wow. So that was ahead of its time, because computers are not really at the forefront of even being used in offices then.
Yeah, I think it was an anti-computer book, and I think it killed my career in IBM.
Oh dear. Now you write under pen names, and I why is that? You tell us about the pen names you write under and why you do that. Oh, sorry, Paul, I think could you just tap your microphone, or you might have come unplugged. I can just hear you there we go, you're back again. That's the one, yep. Yeah, so tell us about some of the pen names and why you write under the pen names.
Okay, I write under the name of Saul Ben, because that's part of my Jewish name. I do it really to kind of inhabit the character, a bit like acting, that you write and you write from a certain perspective. And it's amazing that if you change your name, your perspective changes as well. I write horror stories under the name Violet India Cummings. And I've got a picture in my head. In fact, actually, on on Amazon, there's a picture of Violet. Obviously, it's not me with makeup, but it's someone that, you know, I feel Violet should look like, and that she's the sort of person that should write that kind of book.
Do you know, I love that name. I read that name and I was like, oh, that is a really cool name. So do you like writing underneath, as you said, different genres. So it's you've got sort of stories coming into your head all the time.
Well, yeah, kind of. I set myself the task of writing one book under each of the genres. And so far I've done... I'm working playfully, of course. And so far, I've done a police procedural thriller, a quantum fantasy comedic horror, an LGBTQ plus private eye family saga, and my latest is a swashbuckling historic drama.
Yes, we'll talk about that one a little bit later. When you sit down to write, are you somebody that can... I know you said you're visual when you're writing, which you can explain a little bit more, but do you have to sort of make yourself sit down to write, or do you just write as and when you get the inspiration? Or, you know, some people have to sit there and say they're going to dedicate 6 hours to writing today. How do you do it?
I'm completely incontinent with words. I just sit down and they come out. It's like, you know, I need a break on it. My happiest times are sitting at this computer inhabiting someone else's personality and writing.
So you see, when you get like the story, you actually, because I have this, and I thought everybody does this, but you see things in your mind as like a movie. Is that how it works for you for writing stuff down? So you see.
Yeah, I think that's the hard way of doing it, because today, I mean, Dickens didn't have this facility. Today we have a vast resource of knowledge in the internet. So if I'm writing a historical drama, I can look back on the most reliable source of visual information, which would be the paintings of the time. Mm. So I'm currently writing about the Dutch Golden Age. And of course, it's all there. It's all, you know, how they dress, how they behave, what they ate. It's all there just to be accessed. So it's not difficult. I mean, I don't need to stretch my imagination, because Rembrandt has done that before me and done it so much better. So all I have to do is write the story and then describe what I see in the paintings.
Now, you're also you also design book covers, which are, you know, it does make a difference. I go, because I love buying, I like a physical book. I don't actually like Kindle so much. And I know people do, but I like a physical book to read. I love when you open a book and it's new, and also the covers as well are really important. Really important. So you started off in design and then
I spent
other people.
Nearly 50 years as a designer stroke copywriter, mainly design. I had my own business for most of that time. And, you know, when I retired, I was going to single-handedly revive abstract expressionism and splash paint around. And then my wife bought me a creative writing course at Bournemouth University, and I've just been addicted to writing ever since.
And do you design covers for other writers as well still?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, I design for the joy of it. I don't charge commercial rates, because that would spoil the fun. What I really love doing is getting a client to market in the most efficient and picturesque way possible. So all my covers are very... well, not elaborate, but they're very, very, very visual.
And they just send you sort of like the outline of the book, and then your imagination and your creativity goes into overdrive to create something.
At best, yeah.
Yeah.
What I try to do is to say to people that give me an elevator pitch, a sentence or two describing your book, and it's my job to take that elevator pitch and express it without using words. So it may be just a single image, or it may be a combined image, but something that is striking and eye-catching and encapsulates what's in the book, certainly the mood of the book rather than the literary content.
Now, your latest work, and you mentioned it earlier, is called 1624. So without giving too much away, but getting people interested to read, tell us how this book came to you and what it's about. It's a novel, rather.
Yeah, I was reading a book by Edward Kritzner with the interesting title of The Jewish Pirates of the Caribbean. And it shows the financial backing and the involvement of Jews and Muslims in piracy. It's kind of the law of unintended consequences. So when the Portuguese and the Spanish kicked the Jews and Muslims out of Spain, where did they expect them to go? How did they expect them to make a living? Many of them turned to piracy and then turned back to take vengeance on the Spanish Empire, basically. Mm. And they supported the Dutch and the Moroccans to predate on Spanish and Portuguese shipping. So in the midway through the book, Edward Kritzner says words to the effect of, hey, this stuff's so great, why doesn't someone write a novel? So I thought, well, there's an invitation. And so I did.
And so how long has that been out for? Is that just come out or is it been a while?
Days.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
And how is it doing? Have you got the physical copies, and is it also up on Kindle?
Oh yeah,
I've got
a physical copy in front of me.
Yeah.
This is the joy of design, and why I will appreciate it differently to other people is that if you're writing a book, you're thinking of the imagery all the time. And so I've produced a cover that I think is absolutely gorgeous, but within 6 months I'll probably want to change. But no, it's out now. The publicity is yet to kick in, if it ever does. But I just write for the joy of writing. If it sells, it sells. It's brilliant. Other people will enjoy it as well. Mm. And I've had good feedback from friends, family, and beta readers. But, you know, money talks.
Yeah. I was gonna say to you, what advice would you give to somebody out there that's thinking about writing but doesn't really, sometimes it can seem, a big deal to actually write, sat down to write. So what would you say is the easy way to start getting your thought processes onto paper?
Well, this is my way. I've taught at art schools over the years, and this is how I would suggest that someone that's visually orientated does it, or actually maybe people that aren't. Assemble a scrapbook of images and events that interest you, that that stir something in you. Research it on the internet. There's an infinite resource out there. And just describe what you see. It's that simple. The grammar will come to you, or you can either learn it or people will no doubt correct you. But it's the story that counts. I'd like to think that I had the story for dozens and dozens of great films recently, but I didn't put them on paper, and if I had put them on paper, no one would have read them. But it's just keep like an art student. You've got to keep a scrapbook, you've got to keep a sketch pad, and everything that comes into your head, especially after you've had a decent night dreaming, write down. And the way I work is that it's more like reading than writing. So I have a cast of characters which I'll assemble. And then every morning I wake up and I rush to the computer to see what they've been doing overnight. To find out how they've been interacting and what they've done to surprise me today.
And where can people find out more about you? Have you got a website where people can find all your books?
Yes, there's just put my name Saul Benn into Amazon, under books, and all my stuff will come up. Also, if you want to put Dear Violet, Violet India Cummings into Amazon, that will also come up. And I have a website for design, which is www, obviously, publishingbuddy.co.uk. It's definitely .co.uk, not .com, otherwise you'll be involved in a cult in America somewhere.
Which you don't want to be doing.